Hello there, and you're very welcome to the programme. We shall Fogarty with you for the next hour. And my guest this evening is the wife of one of Kerry's greatest sporting brothers, also joined by her daughter. The seven Casey brothers in Sneem are renowned for their world rowing achievements and much more. In actual fact, it can be said that they were probably the greatest sporting family this country, and indeed, maybe, the world has ever known. Now, sadly, all seven Casey brothers have passed their eternal reward. But this evening, I'm delighted to be joined in conversation by one of their brothers' wives, a lady who recently visited Kerry from her home in America. She is joined by her daughter, Patricia. And to talk for the very first time about these legendary Kerry greats, I extend a very warm Kerry welcome to Myrtle and Patricia.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here, and I'm so fortunate that I ran into you and helped keep the legend of the Caseys alive.
Patricia, you are also very welcome.
Thank you very much, and I'm very honored to be here, and we're very glad we ran into Christy, and thank you very much.
Myrtle, I said probably the greatest sporting family this country or maybe the world has ever known. Seven brothers, you were married to one of them, you knew them all personally. Am I exaggerating?
Not in the least. I believe that you will never find a family again like the Caseys. You could find one, two, three, and even four brothers that will excel in sports. You will never find seven brothers that were all champions in so many fields of sport.
Now, you were married to Jim. Tell us where you're from yourself and how you met Jim Casey.
I met Jim Casey at my home in Galveston, Texas. Galveston, Texas was noted for the 1900 storm. I was born there. My mother was born there. And on Monday nights, I was working at a nightclub at the time. And on Monday nights, it was closed. And the only entertainment in our little town was going to the wrestling matches. And I really did enjoy them. This night, my boss and his wife and I were sitting on the front seats, and Jim was thrown out of the ring by Otto Kuss. Both of them were very clean wrestlers. And I'm talking about the time when wrestling was real wrestling, not the show or the gimmicks or the things that they do today. It's embarrassing to me. But at that time, it was more like the Olympic wrestling or collegiate wrestling, and I really enjoyed the matches. Jim was thrown from the match that night and landed across my boss, his wife, and myself in our laps. And I guess we held on to him too long because he lost that match. He didn't return to the ring on the right count. So the next week, I was working daytime at a theater selling tickets. And I happened to look up, and I saw this giant of a man coming down the street, and I thought, oh, that's Jim Casey. And maybe he's going to come to the movie. Sure enough, he walked up to the theater, put his money down, and said, one, please, but he didn't look up. And I counted his change, and then he looked up, and he said, don't I know you? I said, you sat in my lap last week. And that was the beginning. The next week when he wrestled, came to Galveston on Monday nights, he made it a point to look me up. And then after that, every Monday was his.
You said you saw this giant of a man coming down.
Giant.
Explain to our listeners and our viewers, because we are recording this for a DVD this evening, explain to us what type of a man was Jim Casey.
Everybody that saw Jim thought, what giant shoulders and arms. The upper body was so strong in all of the Casey men, not just Jim. But it's funny, Steve was more thin, brawny. Jim was bigger chested. Mick was big. Mick was bigger than Steve, too. But Steve was wan, what I'd call wan, but he was so powerful. But Jim was just a big hulk of a man from waist up, small waist, small legs. None of them had heavy legs. They had legs more for an oarsman. And just powerful. The shoulders, the back under the arms and that. Just powerful men.
Patricia, if I could turn to you, how many are in your family?
I have two brothers, and I married a gentleman from Castle Island, Charlie Curtin, and he had a family already. It was our second marriage, so I have five stepchildren who are now my children and eight grandchildren.
Now, before we talk about your dad, Lartimus, and your husband, he died a young man. He was only 65 when he died. Tell us about where Charlie was from, because there might be people listening this evening, I've no doubt, who will have remembered him and when he immigrated.
Very good, yes. He's from the large town of Castle Island, but he's really from Knights Mountain, which is just an area outside of Castle Island. And he emigrated 49 years ago and lived in New York, and then he moved to Texas, worked for Shell Oil Company, and that's where I met him. I had been to Ireland with my family, and he had been to Ireland that same year, so a co-worker introduced us that year. That was 1988. And I dated him for a while. I did not tell him I was of Irish descent, didn't tell him anything about my dad. I thought, okay, if there's something here, I want this man to fall in love with me and not my Irish roots. So I was very coy, and after dating for a couple of months, I said, why don't you come meet my parents? So he walked in the door that day, and my dad greeted him, and they looked at each other and said, whoa, who are you? You're from the old country. So it was a surprise to both of them, because I hadn't told my parents that I was dating an Irishman. So it was really a wonderful meeting.
Is there relations of Charlie and Castle Island all the time?
Yes. In fact, the first part of our trip, this visit, was to bring my husband, passed away last year, and his wishes were to be cremated and brought back to Ireland. So I wanted to fulfill his wishes. So we were with his family all last week. We had a beautiful ceremony in the church. Then we took his ashes and buried them with his parents. And I took some of his ashes and scattered them over Knights Mountain. And those were his wishes, and he's settled and resting in peace.
Patricia, how important is it for you and for your family, and how important do you think is it for Charlie to have that wish fulfilled and that he be brought back home to Castle Island and Kerry?
Well, it was very important to him, and it was very important to me, because that felt like it was part of my marriage contract. And, of course, I adored him. He was my life. So I wanted to do this as soon as I could. This was the earliest we could get over. And like I said, he only died last year. But it was extremely important. And now I feel like maybe I can rest a little bit, because this was on my mind for 14 months.
Yeah, well, we're delighted that we could remember him on our program. Yes. That was nice to be able to do that.
And
may the, as the fellow said, may the sod rest lightly on him. Come here, talk to me about your dad. What are your memories of your father, both as a physical big man and as a person and in his roots? By the way, did Charlie know about the Caseys when he met your dad?
No. He got immersed in the Casey families once he started dating me. And my memories of my dad is I always thought he was the good-looking one. He had those beautiful blue eyes, long eyelashes, curly hair. So, you know, being young and the only daughter, that's daddy's, you know, daddy. And as I got older, that's when I appreciated the history of the Caseys. But when you're young, he's just daddy to you.
The history of the Caseys, is it recognized in America, recognized now in your neighborhood, and do people still talk when they meet you and you're introduced as Jim Casey's daughter? Does the name ring a bell?
Certain communities, not so much the everyday, but when you run into someone of Irish descent, there's an acknowledgement. But it's over here is where, you know, when you mention you're a Casey, that you get the recognition, and just about everybody knows the Casey legend.
Myrtle, after meeting Jim and you were going out together, did he tell you then about all the boys, and how did he bring up about his own family, and where were the rest, the other six brothers at this stage?
Jim, Tom, and Steve, the three of them, were in the United States. I had not met any of them other than Jim. When we came back home to, you notice I said home, to Ireland, because I do feel like this is my second home, we met Patty. Then one day, we went to the village, and we were going to meet Mick. As we neared the little bridge that's in Sneem, this giant of a man came hulking, walking. He didn't walk, stride. He was just so big. He just looked like King Kong walking across that bridge to me. That was Mick. So you see, you could pick out a Casey wherever you went. Now, at that time, I had not met Dan, and neither had Jim seen Dan for 50 years. And one time, I accidentally met a man called Mick Sullivan. He had roots with Kerry in some way, and he knew of Dan and where Dan could be reached. We went back home to the United States, and I got in touch with Mr. Sullivan. And I said, the next time that we come to Ireland, I wonder if you could arrange a meeting. So sure enough, the next time we came over, we managed to meet him in Dublin, and he looked up Dan, and the two brothers met for the first time in 50 years.
Well, what better way to go for a break? And of course, Myrtle, your first choice of music, really, it can only be one song, isn't that right?
Oh, yes. Steve Casey of Sneem is my favorite song. I put it on, and I dance around the house to it.
Well, we'll give our listeners the same opportunity. Get out, dance around the house, because this is a special program tonight about one of our greatest ever sporting families, Steve Casey of Sneem.
The boys of the kingdom of Kerry sing glory on many a field. When at football the green and the gold shirts both the champions of Ireland to yield. Now brothers called Casey of Kerry, for wrestling are surely the cream. And the greatest of all at the spin and footfall was the famous Steve Casey of Sneem. Steve Casey brought glory to Ireland, and the champions is surely the cream. And his fame shall be sung by the old and the young. Please cheers for Steve Casey.
And you're very welcome back to the program, because this evening I'm talking to Myrtle Casey and her daughter Patricia, wife and daughter of one of our favourite sons, Jim Casey from Sneem. Myrtle, you spoke earlier on about Jim's wrestling career. Tell us about his actual career. And what happened after you meeting him? And was it full-time? Was he professional? And was he earning money? And what became of him? Who were the people that he fought? And did the rest of the family come to see him?
This was probably Jim's first time to come to Texas when I met him. He had already been wrestling on the West Coast for several years. And he was the West Coast champion, Pacific Coast champion, up and down the whole coast. And he had a belt to prove it, and I have a picture, a beautiful hand-painted oil painting with the belt on. It's gorgeous. And when he came to Galveston, he was wrestling for Morris Siegel out of Houston, and they would go on a circuit, a tour, like wrestling Galveston, Houston, Corpus Christi, San Antonio, Fort Worth, and Dallas. And He found himself too closed in Boston with three Caseys wrestling there. Steve was the champion, and Jim and Tom were wrestling under him on the card. Now, Jim felt that he didn't want to wrestle Steve, his brother, for any matches, and he decided that he would go to the West Coast. and separate the Caseys. Tom stayed in Boston with Steve for a while. And, of course, later on, they both joined the service. Anyway, Dan O'Mahony, who was the champion wrestler from Cork, he and Esther, his wife, were going to California, and they invited Jim to go with him. I didn't know him at this time. They went out to Santa Monica, California, beautiful beach there. Esther and Dan finally opened a bar room there, and they lived just around the corner. Then after I met Jim and we went back to Santa Monica to visit, we visited them many times, and Dano would come down to the beach. This was one little story that Jim told on Dano. Dano was a great reader, and Jim, he didn't care for, I think Jim read Westerns or something like that. But Dano was a reader, and he'd come down to the beach, and he had a little boy he named Punchy. And he would tie Punchy on a rope and tie the rope to his toe and read his book. And Punchy would take care of himself on the beach. And Jim was one who loved children. And he would get all the children that were on the beach, and he'd show them how to put holes on each other. And he finally ended up having two little boys that were expert at wrestling, and he used to take them around. He'd get the family to let him go, and he'd take them especially into Burbank, and he would referee the match. And here I've got pictures of Jim with two little boys telling them, you know, the ins and the outs of the match. And then when the match was over, people would throw money into the kids, and he'd have them gather it up. And he made them put it in the bank and do a savings with that. But Jim was always involved with children.
Was he a professional wrestler? And was there big money in it?
He was a professional wrestler when I met him. And he was wrestling full time. At that time, there wasn't a lot of money in wrestling. But Jim was a very thrifty person. And he managed, no matter what he made in his envelope, he managed to save. He was a great handler of the money, and I let him handle it. I wrote the checks and things and you know, paid the bills and what have you. But he was very good with the handling of the money.
Patricia, did your dad speak to you about his wrestling career? What memories have you about your dad's wrestling?
When I was born, that's when he retired. I was born in Boston, Massachusetts, and at that time he retired and got into the nightclub business, or the barroom business. First barroom he went in with his brother Steve. So as far as the wrestling, I don't have a lot of memories other than what I've heard over the years and through our book, or the Caseys of Sneem book. But my memories are more of the nightclub and the businesses up in Boston.
Myrtle, if I should bring you back now to immigration, and Jim probably spoke to you about why they immigrated and who immigrated first, and I do know that you yourself and Patricia have visited the home place, and you might talk to us about when they were young and what are your memories of speaking to them about all that and the immigration.
It was really hard when they came over. And I believe I remember Jim saying that they came over on the USS Harding, if I'm not mistaken. And the people on the boat, they realized that Steve Crusher Casey was a champion. And they were delighted to be sailing with his family. And Steve and Tom and Jim put on little shows in the boat for these people that were cruising. When they arrived in America, they stayed with their aunt and uncle, and they began to wrestle for Paul Bowser. And this was professional wrestling then. And it was a good life for them. But as I say, later on, it turned into all show. Jim told me that Bob Hope was responsible for what's going on today, so Bob, you're responsible. He suggested to a little, well, he wasn't little, he was a lightweight, Jim was a heavyweight. His name was George Wagner, and he said to George, George was wrestling out in Hollywood, California, he said, you know, TV's coming in, and he said, if you're going to make it, you're going to have a gimmick. And so George said, what do you mean a gimmick? He said, well, you're going to have to do a show. You're going to have something special. So Gorgeous George curled his hair, dyed it, put the little gold bobby pins in it, got a big ermine robe with fur around the bottom with a swishy skirt, and he'd prance in the ring and make that skirt swish, and oh, and then he got a valet that would clear the air with in the ring so there wouldn't be any germs. So at that time, when Jim saw all of this falderol going on, he said, I think that I've about had it. He said, when the day that you go into the ring and they want you to do foolish things, he said, I go into the ring, and if the other fella can beat me, so be it. But he said, if I can beat him, that's the way it's going to be.
Now, he spoke to you, of course, about his young days growing up, and talked to us about what he said to you and how difficult was it for the family. I know there were seven boys. You talked to us about his sisters and his mother and father also, and where they lived and the house they lived in.
One year when we came back, actually this was the first trip that we had made, and my daughter accompanied us on that trip. We rode over, and that's the only way you can get there, is that or go over the mountain.
That's Sneem.
In Sneem, we rode over to Sneem to Bullock, and the pier was showing a lot of wear. The house, the structure of the house, the old house, the stone house where they were born, had no more roof on it, but we could see that it was only a two-room house that probably was a kitchen and living area and one bedroom. And they, I remember Jim talking about when company would come, they'd all be five or six or seven in a bed, the kids, the boys.
How many girls were there?
There were three girls, Kitty, Josephine, and Margaret. And Margaret and McCauley, I believe he was a wrestler at one time in England, they came to Texas to visit us. And so I knew Margaret pretty well. I met Kitty one time in Ireland on one of our trips, but I never did meet Josephine. And I understand that she was living in Dublin, but I could never make contact with her. But the living was so fierce. The place where they were was so bleak. It's beautiful to me, but I can imagine day in and day out having to live there.
Myrtle, talked about what he said about growing up and about his mother and father, because I know that Lortimer St. Paddy, I interviewed him before he died, lovely man, I interviewed him in London, and he spoke about their living on salmon.
Right. That was their living. They fished, and I remember Jim telling me a story about his father. All of the boys had gone. Jack was married, living here. But Mick and all the rest of them were gone over to London, and Jim stayed home. He took care of his mother. He loved his mother. And he said that during the night, he'd be out rambling during the night, go home, barely get to bed, and pretty soon the covers would flop off, and the father would say, Jim boy, I got a contract for some gravel. And Jim would get up in the middle of the night and row he and his father over to some island here, and they would shovel the gravel. They'd go up, they'd have to shovel it down to the shoreline, then they'd have to shovel it from the shore into the boat. Then they'd row back over home and have to unload the boat and then move the gravel to where it was going. Now, that's a hard life.
They had a hard life, Myrtle. What about schooling? I would imagine now that they all left school at a very young age. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. One of the things that Jim said to me that I can remember and will never forget, he said, I wish I had more education. He said, when I was in Ireland, we went to school on the rainy days, the good days we worked on the farm, which proves to me that it was such a hard life. And he said, my greatest regret is that I didn't have enough schooling to get up in front of a crowd and speak. And I assured Jim, he had more schooling than many men who actually attended college, because he had common sense. And without the common sense, it's no good what book learning you have.
It's called the School of Life.
That's right, and he lived it. But he always regretted that. But I told him, I said, you know, you were raised in a little village that was so bleak and so bare, and you had to fight to go to school and fight for everything you did. And I said, you had the courage to, as a young man, to leave your mother and father in your home with nothing in your pocket. He went to London, and he wouldn't contact Steve, Jim went hungry because he was too proud to ask for help, and he didn't want Steve helping him. So I think he met a lady named Kitty Gleason. She had a bed and breakfast or something there, and she took him in. Then he stayed over in England quite a while, and of course they had already done the rowing in England by the time he got there. But at one time, those boys joined a club, and they all became champion oarsmen from what they learned about the intricates of sculling.
And they learned, Myrtle, they learned their rowing, Paddy told me. Rowing, as you said, ye had to row out to the house, and they rowed from the house to school every single day and back. Would I be correct?
That's right. And not only the boys, but the mother. The mother had to row over from this little place called Bullock. She had to row over for her supplies, to go to church, to do anything that she had to do. She was a good oarsman, too. Jim told me many times, that how good she was at rowing, and his sisters were all good. Why wouldn't they be good when the only place they could go, they had to row to get there?
Of England, and the stars of the continent, too. He next took a trip o'er the ocean and came to America true. And the Irish came out in their thousands while the liner was letting off steam. And the bands they did play while the crowds cheered hooray. 3 cheers for Steve Casey from Sneem. Came the madman from Texas to Boston, came a Zorky that brought of a boy, came a Dussex, the Omaha Terror, not forgetting bold Biddy McCoy. Came Clark from Dundee who beat Dano, saying I'll put all you Irish to dream. But was finished by Steve, who said, here by your leave, is revenge for old Ireland. And
you're very welcome back to the program. Patricia and Myrtle Casey are my guests tonight. Yes, the Caseys of Sneem, they'll never be forgotten. Patricia, you visited the old homestead with your mum when you came home on holidays one time, and your mother has explained to us it was so small. 7 boys, 3 girls, mother and father reared in a small little household. What struck you when you visited this place?
The remoteness, of course. To get there, you had to row over. And row against the currents in the Sneem River. I mean, just the tides there are unbelievable. So rowing is not just a rowing like a canoe in a pond. It's really rowing. So I do remember the old house with the roof gone. The little stream that you had to bend down to get the water, and that's where they had to take their pails and get the water and bring it back to the house. And just the remoteness is unbelievable.
Did your dad talk to you? I presume he did. He spoke to you about growing up there. What did he remember?
Fishing, rowing, eating seaweed and using seaweed for medicine. And I would imagine the seaweed there in the Sneem River and the Sneem Bay must be full of minerals and vitamins that only had to help their bodies. Plain food, which we should all be eating nowadays. And of course, he talked about his brothers and his sisters and his parents and the playing out in the field, which turned into to real wrestling matches and brawling and sparring. And the hardest partners they ever wrestled against were each other, and they always hurt each other. They went for blood.
Had they a happy childhood?
I think they were happy. You know, back in those days, 80, 90 years ago, life was very simple. They had each other. They had their family. They had enough to eat with the fish that they caught, and I'm sure the spuds and some vegetables and milk. And I think, yes, all in all, they were happy.
When you look at the photographs of your six uncles and your father, and I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say, in my opinion, they're the seven most physically perfect men that I have ever seen. Now, when you look at those photographs of the way they grew up and the way they developed, talk to us about that. Are you astonished when you look at those photographs of your father and your uncles?
Astonished and very proud. When you look at the pictures of them, you know that, and because you know them all, you know that every muscle that you see is real, and it comes from hard work and labor. Whereas some of the muscles you see nowadays, I think, are chemically enhanced and pumped up and just does not look like a real man. So, yeah, and I've seen the indentations where the broken bones were and all the injuries that they've had and the cauliflower ears that many of them developed from wrestling and hard work.
What does it mean to you now to be a Casey when you come to Ireland? You mentioned earlier on that you remembered as a Casey. What does it mean to you personally to be a Casey?
I think our trip in 1983 when my dad and his four brothers got together, that's when I really understood the history of the brothers and their achievements. To see the five of them in the rowing skull just, and they were in their 70s at that point, to see them all get in a skull and row like they were rowing last week, and the beauty and the ease of it, that was the eye-opener for me.
Lovely memory. Myrtle, to get back to you, you mentioned how they actually, it was the Ace Rowing Club in London
Ace
that they joined.
Club.
My own memory isn't too bad all the time.
Good.
Now, and they won all round them, didn't they? They were unbeaten in England.
That's right. Ace Rowing Club, and someone directed them to there, and they became great oarsmen. Now, at the time, I believe it was Patty and Tom and Mick. Now, Steve was in America at this time, and they were going to send home for the other boy. But those three were at the Ace Rowing Club rowing and making a name for themselves in London. They had already made their name in Sneem at the Killarney races and all of the races, Dingle and Castletown Bear and all of those places.
Now, just for the record, I must add in this. Once they were beaten in Ireland, they were beaten by a crew from Castletown Bear down around West Cork, and I'm just putting that in for the record because I know the last time I did a program about the cases, I was very quickly corrected. So, now, they won the English Championship, didn't they?
That's
the
rowing
championship. Now, talk to us about winning that and bring us on to the Olympics. This is the most fascinating part of the Casey story.
And it would have been the most fascinating story of all time Olympics if a family of brothers, built like they were, could go over and win the singles.
In the Berlin?
The doubles.
Berlin Olympics.
In Hitler's Berlin Olympics 46. In 1936. At the time, the boys didn't realize. They didn't know what the Olympics were all about when they were born in that little godforsaken place down there. They didn't have radios, papers, or, you know, they got the news occasionally, word of mouth and that. But they didn't realize what the Olympics meant. But as they grew older and they found out what the Olympics meant, it was a heartbreaker because they knew that they could have won everything they sat there fanny in to row.
What happened, Myrtle? Tell our listeners why they didn't represent England in the Olympics.
Well,
they would choose, weren't they?
You know, when you go to a country, you have to eat. You have to pay rent. So you have to make money. And Steve was working as a bouncer, accepting money. And someone, at that time, you were not allowed to participate in the Olympics if you were a professional. Now, today, they do ads and everything else. But at the time, they were just eking out a living. And someone brought this to the attention of the committee, and they were disbarred from rowing.
Now, they had been chosen to go to the Olympics in 36.
Absolutely. They had been chosen. And when this came up, they were disqualified, and the team that went, the Caseys, had already beaten them.
Now, Paddy, getting back to him again, because he was the only one of your family that I spoke to, he told me before he died that it was the greatest regret of their sporting life, and they could have brought home something like 30 gold medals. Now, even to mention it and talk it like that, did all the boys regret it? You spoke to them all, didn't you?
Yes. And as I say, as they grew older and time had passed and it was gone from them, then, and of course the Olympics on TV, which is, you know, broadcast nationwide, Jim said that that was his greatest regret, because had the Caseys been allowed to go to Hitler's Berlin Olympics in 1936, he would have showed them the real master race, the Caseys of Sneem.
With Jesse Owens, the great sprint.
That's right.
Patricia, staying on the same topic, even to speak about bringing home up to 30 gold medals, it sounds out of this world, doesn't it? Did your dad speak about it? And what are your thoughts on what we're discussing?
Oh, yeah, that was a major regret. And it's unfortunate of the timing, because nowadays you can be a professional and still compete in the Olympics. And, the times they were professional and competing, it was before TV. It was almost before radio. So the publicity wasn't there. And nowadays, if you're two brothers, twins, if you just think of all the publicity you get if you're in sports and you're good. So nowadays, if you seven brothers, it would just be a worldwide story. It would be fascinating.
It would be actually a worldwide story, right? It was very much regretted, I presume, by all of them.
Very much. And the families, the children, all of us, yeah.
Yeah, that's who's going to go on. The legend of the Caseys, I don't think, will ever die. There'll always be somebody that will remember, or some grandchildren that will be told the stories about the Caseys. But it's too bad, because it could have been such a wonderful thing for the Caseys and for Ireland. It would have been fascinating.
Myrtle, did they age gracefully, or had they a lot of regrets? That was one great regret. When they got older and they saw what was happening in the sporting world around them, money that was being made, and television and radio and films and everything, had their regrets, and did any of the seven boys get bitter?
I don't think they ever got bitter. They did have enormous regrets for what they were not able to do. They could do it, but they were not allowed to do it. I don't believe that they ever pined over not being able to do it, because the main reason is Each one of them went out on their own, and every one of them became a success in life. Almost millionaires, you know, in everything that they did. They each one were successful financially. So now, had they not made a success of their life, there would be a lot of regrets. But actually, you know, the Olympics were not going to make a millionaire of them in those days. Now, today, they do ads and everything else. But in those days, it was just the glory of winning the Olympics.
For the sake of our listeners, how many of the boys immigrated?
Jim, Tom, and Steve. Patty was to come over after Steve had won the championship. And he came back home to Ireland and asked the boys, would they like to go to America? It's the land of gold, you know. So the four of them were going to return together. And Patty had his back broken in a match just before they were ready to sail. And he, of course, was laid up for many months in London. And just the three boys actually went over to America at that time. But Jack came over later. We invited Jack to come over. And my daughter was getting married at the time, and he lingered. He stayed quite a while. He was not too anxious to come back to Ireland at the time.
What about the three girls?
Margaret came over with her husband, Mick Halley, and visited us. I met Kitty in Sneem one time. She and her son came over. But I have never met Josephine.
So your final choice of music is Dingle Bay, because it's associated with the sea, it's associated with water, and it's associated with sailing and ships and things like that. Dingle
right.
Bay. And I think you want to dedicate this to all the seven boys and three girls, is that right?
Absolutely. This was our intention when we fortunately met up with you and Mr. Reardon. We found it was like a gold mine that we accidentally got together. But to us, at least this part of their life is going down on record, never to be forgotten.
Well, I want to thank the Lansdowne Arms Hotel here in Kinmare for facilitating us with the facilities to do this recording. I want to thank Christy of CR Videos, who actually set up the interview. And without Christy, I wouldn't have had the honour or the privilege of meeting Myrtle and her daughter. The Casey's family, the seven boys, they left Sneem, they went forth throughout the world, they took on the best sportsmen throughout the world, seven boys, they were a credit to their county, a credit to Ireland, a credit to themselves. I have no doubt we will never ever see the likes of the Casey brothers again.
The US is over, when the champions have all fallen down, we'll all go to Kofar to welcome the big man in the green dressing gown. There'll be bonfires at Crossroads in Kerry, there'll be wining and dining serene, and we'll sing all the night till the morning's first light. Three cheers for Steve Casey from Sneem, for the Casey's brought glory to Ireland, and I pledge you that brotherly theme. And our fame shall be sung by the old and the young. Three cheers for Steve Casey from Sneem.